Welcome to Juneau Afternoon. I'm your host, Danny Bartholomew. Today, we'll find out about Saturday's Alaska Public Gardens Day with guest Meryl Jensen. Chuck Caldwell will inspire us to wet a line in preparation for tonight's casting night at Twin Lakes, and we'll say goodbye to pale ale and hello to raspberry wheat with guest Andy Klein from the Alaska Brewing Company. And we'll meet Michael Andronov, owner of the Russian restaurant that's in town. That, writer's almanac, music, and more. Here on KTOO FM. Weather for today, mostly sunny, highs around 60, northwest wind 10 to 20 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy, lows around 38, and northwest wind to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, sunny, highs around 63, with northwest winds at 10 miles per hour again. This is National Native News. I'm Sarah Gustavus, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. Villages in the interior of Alaska are facing flooding as temperatures rise rapidly after a long winter. KUAC's Dan Bross reports an ice jam caused significant damage to one community over the weekend.
Spring breakup always poses a threat as fractured ice can pile together in dam rivers. That's just what happened on the Yukon River at Circle Sunday. First Chief Jessica Boyle says it forced water over a 25-foot seawall.
Came over the seawall, came up onto the roads, just totally engulfed the whole downtown area of Circle.
Boyle says about 15 homes were flooded by as much as 3 feet of water.
And then a couple came off their foundation and floated into the woods behind where their house originally was.
Boyle says a community hall on higher ground is providing housing for some while others have taken refuge with friends. She says the community of about 80 people is a mess.
There's ice chunks on the roads. It's pretty muddy, pretty messy. There's a strong smell of diesel and gas. In the downtown area, our church got flooded, our clinic got flooded. It looks pretty rough.
Circle's electric generator is working, and Boyle says the community has a 5,000-gallon holding tank that's providing fresh water, but there's concern the city well may be contaminated. Community leaders are communicating with agencies about recovery assistance. For National Native News in Fairbanks, Alaska, I'm Dan Bross.
The U.S. Department of Interior released an updated proposal last week for hydraulic fracturing for oil and gas on federal land. The drilling technique is commonly known as fracking. Wyoming Public Radio's Irina Jorov reports the proposed federal rules also address fracking on tribal lands.
The rulemaking process started in 2010, and the latest draft incorporates feedback from more than 177,000 public comments. The final rule will affect drilling operations on 56 million acres of Indian lands. The proposal still has three main components: the disclosure of chemicals used in fracking, regulation of water management plans for flowback water, and improvement of wellbore integrity assurances, though some of the specifics have changed. And Bureau of Land Management Principal Deputy Director Neil Quarnsey says the new rule also aims to accommodate states and tribes that have already developed their own fracking rules to minimize duplication.
The proposal also expands provisions that allow the BLM to accept existing state practices when those practices meet or exceed the standards established in our own rule. And it acknowledges state decisions on the isolation of underground geologic zones as it applies to water resources.
Environmental groups were quick to voice displeasure over the changes, saying the BLM caved to industry pressure. And some tribes have criticized the rule because they say the Department of Interior isn't actually authorized to regulate fracking on tribal lands. An energy bill being sponsored by Representative Don Young of Arkansas would make the DOI's rules enforceable only when a tribe expressly consents to them. The fracking rule is now open to an additional 30 days of public comment, and the energy bill has been referred to committee for further vetting. For National Native News, I'm Irina Jorov.
Officials from the Environmental Protection Agency proposed this week that an abandoned dump on the Macaw Reservation in Washington State be added to a federal cleanup program. EPA officials say leaders from the Macaw tribe requested that the Warmhouse Beach dump be added to the nation's Superfund site list. That would mean the federal government must develop a plan and dedicate financial resources to cleaning up the area. The Warmhouse Beach dump was used in the 1970s and 80s by the nearby Macaw Air Force Station, along with tribal and non-tribal members. The dump was closed in 2012. Harmful pollutants have now been found in nearby creeks and beaches. A public comment period on the proposal opens today and will last through mid-June.
On this day in 1945, the Constitution and bylaws of the Mississippi Band of Choctaw Indians were accepted by the U.S. Department of the Interior. The tribe's members voted to ratify the Constitution and government structure the month before. This is National Native News. I'm Sarah Gustavus.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Welcome to a Juneau afternoon. I'm Annie Bartholomew here with Merrill Jensen.
Good afternoon. How are you doing?
Fine. And yourself?
Doing great. It's a beautiful day outside, so can't be bad.
Can't be bad. So you're here to talk about Alaska Public Gardens Day. What
yes.
is that?
Alaska Public Gardens Day is an offshoot of National Public Gardens Day that they have down south, which is generally held the first Saturday in May, and that's a little early for gardening in Alaska. So my colleagues at the Alaska Botanical Garden in Anchorage and the Georgeson Botanical Garden in Fairbanks, we kind of put our heads together to see what we could do to rectify that situation. And we were able to get the legislature to designate the first Saturday, or the Saturday prior to Memorial Day, as Alaska Public Gardens Day. So that's what we're celebrating this Saturday.
Great. So what kind of activities do you guys have planned to celebrate?
This year we're going to have two tours. At 11 in the morning, we're going to do a History of the Arboretum walk. And then at 1 o'clock, we'll do a Cool Plants of the Arboretum walk. And then we're also going to be giving away some lupins to the first 80 people that come out Saturday morning. Those are ones that we have grown out there, and we'll be giving those away. And it looks like the weather is going to be nice still, so we just like people to come out and appreciate the gift of Caroline Jensen to the city of Juneau.
Great. And who do you expect to attract at this event?
I'm hoping that people who have not been out to the Arboretum before will come out and just see what a cool place it really is. If you've never been out there before, we're across Pearl Harbor from the Shrine, so we're out past mile 23, and we're right on the water. It's a real nice horseshoe-shaped garden that looks out across to the Chilcats, and it's just a great spot to come enjoy a day in strolling the grounds.
Great. What kind of plants do you grow there?
We've got a wide variety of stuff. If I remember right, our official count is like 958 different types of plants that are in the ground out there. So a little bit of everything that's hardy in southeast Alaska. Most people don't know that we can grow that much stuff. They think we just, you know, grow moss and that's it. But no, there's a lot of diversity that we can grow here.
And who takes care of that garden out there?
I do, and then I've got a seasonal employee that does a lot of the lion's share of, you know, getting things taken care of, and I get to do a lot of the administrative, but I get my fingers dirty too, so it's not all paperwork.
Great. So can you tell me about the Primrose Collection?
Yeah, we hold the National Primrose Collection. This is the a designation from the North American Plant Collections Consortium, and that's run by the American Public Gardens Association down south, and we're a member of them. And I was talking with their director a couple of years ago, and, you know, kind of floated the idea past her, saying, well, we've got a lot of primrose up here. Do you think we ought to go ahead and get this, down onto a formalized collection? And she thought it was a great idea. And it took about 2.5 years of paperwork and everything to get everything through to where we were the official collection. So now we have the largest documented collection of primrose in North America. And it's an expanding collection. We currently have 144 species and cultivars in the ground and another approximately 70 in various stages of production. Little tiny seedlings that I've been growing up, and those will be planted out this year, next year.
Wow. What do you think is the most exciting part about gardening in Alaska?
Oh, just dealing with the interesting climate that Southeast presents to us. It's everything's different. Nothing stays quite the same. This spring was kind of interesting. We were kind of on the fast track where everything was popping out of the ground early in March, and then our cold snaps back in April. I mean, we had 2 10-inch snows in April. We get a lot more snow out the road than in town, and it just put everything back on hold, which is okay. This way, we've got more color for Public Garden Day this year.
Great. What are some of the challenges of the Arboretum?
Keeping the bears out of the mountain ash trees in the fall. The bears absolutely love the mountain ash berries, and they come in the fall after the fish are gone, and they're still looking for stuff before they den up, and they kind of camp out there for a couple of weeks. They climb the trees and pick as many berries as they can and kind of gorge themselves one last feast before denning up. And I wouldn't mind so bad if they knew how to prune trees, but they don't. So they get up there and they just snap the branches out and kind of make a mess of things. And it's like, what do you do? We're kind of not really baiting them, but we are, because we have so many trees out there that they're like, good stuff.
They know about this place.
They know about this place. Last fall it was mom with her twin cubs, so they now know where we're at.
Oh, no.
So, yeah, I expect to see him again this fall. It's always kind of fun to look out the office window and there's a bear hanging out the tree looking at you.
So if people want to visit the Arboretum or become involved with Alaska Public Gardens Day.
Yeah, the Arboretum, if you don't know where it's at, we're out past mile 23. We're just past the shrine. So you go past the shrine and we're 8/10 of a mile on beyond that. And we've got a road sign out there, and there's a little dirt lane that comes down to us. And there's generally a lot of people that come out that on Alaska Public Gardens Day. So I recommend to park at the Peterson Lake Trailhead and then walk up to our entrance.
What kind of shoes should people wear?
We've got a lot of lawn, so it's just anything that's comfortable. Spike heels don't work real well unless you want to kind of aerate the grass, and that's happened during a couple of weddings out there. So it's whatever is comfortable.
So you also host weddings?
We do. We have a couple of weddings that come out. It's a dynamite location. It's just kind of we don't have an indoor facility for them, so it's, if the weather's bad, yeah, you can get soggy, and we've had a couple of those, but we've had a couple of really nice, beautiful, stunning weddings where it's, you know, a bluebird day, kind of like today.
Great. Is there anything else you'd like to share with the audience that I haven't asked you about?
Our hours are Wednesday through Sunday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., and we're also open on Monday holidays like Labor Day, Memorial Day, some of the Alaska state holidays that are on Mondays. So come out and enjoy that day off.
Great. And this is happening Saturday?
This is happening Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m.
Great. Well, thank you so much for coming in.
Yep. Thanks for having me down today.
The Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 22nd of May, 2013. It's the birthday of Arthur Conan Doyle, born Edinburgh, 1859, studied medicine at the University of Edinburgh. His favorite professor was Joseph Bell, who taught his students how to make a successful diagnosis through observation and deduction. Doyle went into the practice of medicine after graduating, wrote fiction in his spare time, and in 1887, in the story A Study in Scarlet, he created a character based on his old professor, the detective Sherlock Holmes, who said, "Once you eliminate the impossible, whatever remains, no matter how improbable, must be the truth. Nothing clears up a case so much as stating it to another person." And the person whom Sherlock Holmes stated his cases to, of course, was a doctor, Dr. Watson. Holmes said, "You have a grand gift for silence, Watson. It makes you quite invaluable as a companion." Conan Doyle ended up writing 56 short stories and 4 novels starring Sherlock Holmes, in each of which Holmes demonstrated the powers of deduction. "There is nothing more deceptive than an obvious fact," he said. "It is a capital mistake to theorize before one has data. Insensibly, one begins to twist facts to suit theories instead of theories to suit facts." And it's the birthday of Peter Matheson, born in New York City, 1927, joined the Navy during World War II, went on to Yale. One of his professors at Yale asked if Matheson would like to work for the CIA, which was newly formed. Matheson asked if he could be sent to Paris, and the professor agreed. So, Matheson said, out of sheer greed and opportunism, off I went. The CIA helped fund Matheson's founding of the Paris Review, and in Paris, Matheson infiltrated the circle of French communists to find out what they were up to. But as the McCarthy trials got attention in America, Matheson resigned from the CIA. He spent 3 years working unsuccessfully as a commercial fisherman on Long Island, and in 1956, at the age of 29, took off across the country in a Ford with a sleeping bag, some books, a shotgun, and wrote a book about it called Wildlife in America, which caught the eye of the New Yorker magazine, where Matheson wrote about a trip to the Amazon, went on to write novels, including At Play in the Fields of the Lord and The Snow Leopard. Here's a poem for today by Hal Sirovitz, What Followed Your Birth. "You might not like being reminded of your birthday," Father said, "but your mother and I do. Your birth was a happy occasion. What followed was both good and bad. That was to be expected. But what we didn't expect was that you'd be the last of your friends to get a job, which you still haven't gotten yet. It just took you longer to get started. You had to go back to school. That wouldn't have been so bad if you were learning something. But after all these years, to still not know what you want for a present doesn't speak well for education." A poem by Hal Sirovitz, What Followed Your Birth, from his collection Father Said, published by Soft Skull Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. And by the Wall Street Journal Weekend Edition, offering writing about finances, food, art, wine, and culture from around the world. More at wsj.com/celebrateweekend. Engineered by Noah Smith, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon. I'm Annie Bartholomew, and we have a celebrity in the studio, Andy Klein from Alaskan Brewing Company.
Yo. Annie, champion of the world. How you doing?
Excellent.
I love listening to you on Juno Afternoon here.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
It's a trip.
I got to do it for a little while, you know, and it's a fun show to do, to talk to everyone coming in. I love it.
Definitely.
All right. Well, yeah, hey, I'm at the brewery now. Excited to be there. And there's a couple, we have like kind of a couple of announcements just happening like all at the same time. One of them's kind of sad, I have to say. And one of them is really super happy. Two of them are happy. Should we talk about the sad one?
Yeah,
let's talk about the sad one for a second.
Let's
get it over with. It's like a Band-Aid. Let's just do it quick. Get it over with. Well, and people have heard rumors about this for months. But we finally, today, were able to make the announcement that Alaskan Pale Ale, unfortunately, is no longer going to be brewed by Alaskan Brewing Company.
Forever.
Forever and ever.
How can you just do that to people?
I know. Well, here's what happened. We can't get the hops anymore that make the beer. So when this beer was first invented and put on the market 26 years ago, this hops called the Tettnanger hops very readily available. And they've just kind of not been used by other brewers as much. And so it went from there used to be many, many farmers growing that hops, and now there's just a couple left growing that hops at all. Only a few hundred acres of this hops is being grown anymore.
Wow.
So it, what happens is we could get the volume amount, but when you order hops, typically what you do is you find these flavor characteristics within a certain type of hops that matches up with the flavor profile you're looking for in the beer, and you're able to do that with most hops because they grow so much of it. With this hops, it was just getting to the point where we couldn't rely on the flavor profile or the quality of the hops anymore. You know, like if they had a bad year, they had a bad year, and we were left with hops that just weren't that great necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the thing about Alaskan brewing is that it's kind of all about quality and consistency in its beers, and so they just kind of made the decision that, and this was working with the brewers and our quality assurance people, that pale ale is just not going to be able to be made anymore. Now, it's possible that a golden ale or even the same pale ale might come back in some limited edition run at some point. We don't have any plans to do that right now. So, yeah, pale, you're looking right now, Annie, at a bottle of the last batch of pale ale, our delicious golden ale. It's a misnamed ale. It was called pale, you know, American pale ale and India pale ale is a very mm-hmm. specific type of thing. This ale is not actually a pale ale. It's not
a pale ale at all.
It's a golden ale, and it was called pale just because the only other thing they had then was amber. And so they called this one, it's paler than the amber, so they called it pale. But
the
then
other ale.
The craft brewing industry grew up around this beer and kind of made these other definitions of what a pale ale should be. But should we taste a little of it?
Sure.
You want to taste a little of the pale ale?
Yeah.
Have you tasted it before?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, and then what do you think? Is it one that you like, or one that you kind of, have you had one recently?
Not recently. I usually go with IPA or Alaskan White.
IPA, Alaskan White, those are good. So you like the bitter
a little bit more. I like the bitter.
You like the bitter with the IPA.
I like to remember I'm drinking beer.
Yes. Well, this personally was one of my go-to beers. Because it's got, to me, it has like a lot of flavor to it, a lot of flavor characteristics without overabundance of hops and without a lot of bitter at the end. So it's just mm-hmm. a smooth drink, and it's kind of like a lawnmower beer, they kind of describe them. You know, it's like you go out and mow the lawn, come back, you have an Alaska Pale, refreshing, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, Alaska Pale. It's sad to drink the last of it. But what people should know is that there still are cases available right now, but we kind of estimate that we might only have about 2 weeks left, maybe 2 to 3 weeks, up to a month possibly, but for the most part, 2 to 3 weeks left of the pale available at all, and then it'll just be gone. So if you're a pale ale fan, this is what's been happening at the gift shop out at the brewery, people have been coming in and buying like 6 cases and just walking out with a dolly, you know, they're just buying. So, so if you want a pale ale, you gotta get it now.
And, do you expect a black market to pop up?
Wouldn't you? I do. Yes, I think it will happen.
This lawnmower,
yeah,
dudes.
As lawnmower season gets upon us here,
I feel like I'm on Dish Delish.
Yes. What are you tasting there? Are you picking up certain flavors, things like that? To me, it's got a really light hop characteristic. You know,
definitely.
Like the aroma is very light. Also, kind of, there's a little bit more malt to it than like maybe like an American pale ale, like our Free Ride pale ale, where you get a lot less malt and a lot more hop and a lot more kind of like refreshing citrusy kind of stuff. This one doesn't have that citrus stuff as much going on, but anyway, the Alaskan pale ale.
It's over.
Delicious.
Pale ale is over.
And still available, but only for a couple more weeks. So run out and get your Alaskan pale ale cases and 12 packs and 6 packs while you can. Some retailers are out. And then, so you have to just kind of ask around, but this is just kind of our, like, letting everyone know, go get it, and in a couple of weeks, you're not going to be able to. Should we turn to fun news now?
Sure, let's...
Let's turn to fun news. Let's stop.
Bring in the new.
I hate to bring everyone down, saying that Alaskan Pale Ale is going away. That's hard. I haven't been at the brewery very long. A couple of months.
You're just apologizing.
And then right
everyone.
Out of the chute, I got to say, oh, one of the favorite beers of people is going to go away. That just doesn't seem fair. Why do they do that to me?
It's miserable.
That's miserable. But here's a fun thing. Let's talk about this instead. This delicious bottle
Bring
I have
on.
In front of me here. The raspberry wheat. Now, Annie, You're one of the very few people. This is not going to be released for a week and a half.
Ooh.
So outside of the brewery, basically, you're one of the only people that's tasted this year's raspberry wheat. So
wow.
Here we go. We're going to pour it for you.
I can't wait.
I know. Now, what I love about this, this is really fun, but when you look at the pour of this, look how pretty that is.
Wow.
Isn't that nice?
It's that kind of rich color.
Rich orangey pink color to it there.
Gorgeous.
Raspberry wheat. And even in the head, it's a pink. It's got a pink, you know, the foam is nice and pink. Nice stuff, right? Amazing.
Mm. Were there any artificial colors involved?
Nothing. No. It's totally, absolutely all natural. Raspberry.
Ooh.
Right?
It's kind of fruity.
Have you not had it before?
No, I've had other raspberry wheats before.
But you've never had the Alaskan raspberry wheat?
No, not at all.
So the thing about this that's really amazing is that it creates this phenomena. We sold out of this at the brewery gift shop last year in 55 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
People start lining up. The brewery gift shop doesn't open until 11. And people start lining up at 8 o'clock, 8:30 in the morning.
Wow, that's like Beanie Babies.
Right. So here's what we're going to do. You want a little of this? Jeff's in here. Jeff wants to taste a little of the raspberry wheat. Jeff's the second person outside the brewery to taste it. What do you think?
Sweet.
Sweet?
Sweet.
Is it sweet to you? Because I always think that it's more tart than sweet. I mean, it's got raspberry in it, so it's sweet.
It is tart.
But I kind of pick up the tartness more.
Good.
It's good. And then because it's a wheat beer, it's got a very light, the beer itself is a very light beer that carries the taste of the raspberry. But yeah, so here's the interesting thing is that, so all these people for years now have lined up and had to wait for hours outside the gift shop. We've got people, for instance, there's a wedding happening on June 1st, the day after this opens. They're sending people early, that wedding party, to make sure they get cases of the raspberry wheat, to make sure they're in line, right? People are, you know, people get nuts about this.
Who are these people?
They're beer lovers. So here's what we're going to do this year. We're going to have a pancake feed, set up a tent outside, along the line, feed people pancakes. Raspberry wheat pancakes with raspberry syrup from the puree that's used in this beer, and some fresh raspberries thrown in, and free pancakes.
Free pancakes?
Free pancakes for everyone in the line.
Wow.
Sounds like fun, right?
You know exactly what to do.
Yeah, free
pancakes. I'm going to show up.
Absolutely,
when is it?
Show up. It's happening next Friday.
Next Friday.
The pancakes will start around 10 o'clock. And the pancakes go for a couple hours, about 10 to noon or so. I'll be feeding people free pancakes out there. And the gift shop itself opens at 11 o'clock out at the brewery, and that's when you can start buying the raspberry wheat beer.
Wow.
Sounds like fun. It doesn't even feel like a line anymore, right?
No,
you're
it just
free
sounds
pancakes.
Like a party.
It just sounds like a party, having a great time.
Ooh.
And this delicious beer.
Yes, it is.
Now, this is the thing you think about. You show up with a case of this beer at a party.
Well, everybody's your friend.
Everybody's your friend, right? I mean, that's a great thing to show up, right? Special beer. To me, this beer tastes like summer a little bit. You know,
mm-hmm.
I'm a big, you know, Alaskan fan. You know, I've always been a big Alaskan beer fan. And so, you know, I always wait for the raspberry wheat to come out.
You're one of those people in line.
I never did stand in the line.
You didn't have to stand in the line?
I just, friends, you know. I'd pick it up from friends or that kind of thing. It's also available in other retail outlets and stuff. It's available, or it'll be available around town. We'll get it out there. But to make sure you get your case and get a free pancake, why not?
Yeah.
Come on in, especially if the weather holds. Wouldn't that be awesome?
Ooh.
Has this weather been amazing?
It's gorgeous.
You're not part of Jesse's bike gang,
biker
are you?
Gang.
The Daggers?
No, she's trying to.
She wants you to be a Dagger?
She's like, bring your bike downtown. We can bike around. I got programming to do.
Yeah.
But on that topic of Jesse, a lot of my friends are going to Beer Fest in Haines. And as a community service, could you give us like a how to talk about beer when you're someone who doesn't know how to talk about beer? Like, what are
the
adjectives you need to know?
So this is great. I'm going to be up there at the Beer Fest, too. I'm going to be pouring beer. Alaskan Brewing will be up there pouring beer. I'm going to be at the dinner and doing a little bit of talking about the different beers that are being paired that we're bringing with that dinner. So I'm going to
beer historian.
I'm excited about going to the Brew Fest. It's going to be fun. So this is a great question because I'm new to this as well. I'm surrounded all day long by people who know way more about beer than me.
Can you taste the flavor of the hops?
So
it's smooth.
Here's the thing that you just do. It's not even talking about it so much. It's just knowing how to taste beer. So this is what you do. You take your glass, Like mm-hmm. You pour, you have your glass, you have a little in there. Do you need a little refresher?
I do.
Okay. I'm going to pour that in there. All right. So the first thing, so you have your glass. Hold it. This is what the quality assurance guys at the brewery told me how to taste beer. You hold it like this on the bottom. Put it in your hand and hold it on the bottom.
In the right hand or the left hand?
Either one. And then also kind of wrap your hand around the beer. And what you're doing is actually warming the outside of the beer a little bit.
Oh.
And then you swirl it. Swirl the top a little bit. These glasses are a little hard to swirl, but you get that swirl going.
Got
and the
swirl.
First thing you want to do is you kind of, I guess I skipped ahead. But the first thing you do is you hold it up to light and look at it, right?
You know, to see if it's transparent.
And just to appreciate it, just to see it's, you know, this beer is beautiful, right? Look at that beer with that pink head and the beautiful color, the kind of amber, red amber color that it is.
So hold it up to the light.
Hold it up to the light.
How many seconds
look at
is just, appropriate?
You just appreciate it. I'd say 7 seconds.
7 seconds.
7 seconds.
It's a science.
Yes. Next, you hold it in your hand and you do that swirl. Hold it in your two hands, you do that swirl. And then you just smell the top of it. Now, in wine, they tell you, you stick your nose way down in there. And in beer, they say, you don't have to quite do that. You should be getting the smell and the aromas of the beer like that. Now, in that, a lot of the new beers especially, you'll be picking up, that's where you pick up a lot of the dry hops. The
okay.
dry hops are aroma hops, and they're all about that kind of first blush aroma that you're getting by that. And then you kind of look at it again, hold it up, and take a little sip.
You look like you're sloshing it around in your mouth.
You slosh it around. So what I always do is kind of get it to both sides of the tongue, back and front. Like,
it's quite the maneuver.
And then I also chew it a little. And you end up making this noise when you chew. But you know how you can chew and create like an air pocket that happens in the back of your nasal passage? That
mm-hmm.
allows you to get all these flavors
okay.
that get released in the beer. And then you're tasting for bitterness, for hops, for maltiness, for sweetness, all those kinds of flavors that kind of come out in beer.
Great.
And then the other thing about tasting beer, you know, unlike tasting wine where you can taste it and then spit it out if you're tasting lots of wines, you never spit out beer. You always swallow it.
Don't be that guy.
And it's actually because a big part of the taste of beer is how it all works as it's going down, and that way back of your mouth is actually part of the tasting sensation of beer because of the carbonation. It kind of bubbles back and bubbles around, and that's how you taste beer.
Wow.
And make sure you enjoy it. But a lot of the beers, you know, I think, you know, there's a big trend in beers for hoppiness, hop, hop, hops. Like, just seems like people are jamming hops into beers. And that's a big trend that's happened in beers. And you'll be tasting a lot of that.
Too many hops.
I don't know about too many, but just that's a big flavor. And then another big one that's happening with a lot of sort of smaller craft breweries especially is the sours, the Brett's. They use Brett yeast, which is a wild yeast, which actually sours the beer. For traditional brewing, that's like the worst thing that could possibly happen. But these guys are kind of taming that sour beer to make it taste the way they want it to taste.
Mm-hmm.
An example of that is Anchorage Brewing Company does these very small batches, large bottles, but makes great beer. They make great beer. And there's a lot of places. That's the other thing that's exciting. There's so many places in Alaska now that's making great beer. So, you know, we feel like, sure, it's a little bit of competition, but mostly it's just exciting. That
yeah.
all that great beer is happening. It means more and more people are drinking great beers, and that's only good for Alaskan brewing. I mean, we're excited about people wanting to have good beers because we make great beers.
Wow. Well,
yeah.
I'm really excited to have you on the show today, Andy.
It was great to have you on, Annie. You're doing a fantastic job. I love listening to you.
Oh, thanks. All right. Well, in honor of the new raspberry wheat, we have Raspberry Beret by Prince.
Thank you.
This is a Juno afternoon. I'm Annie Bartholomew, and Chuck Caldwell is with us today.
I'm here representing both Rain Country Fly Fishers and also Trout Unlimited to talk about the casting night we have tonight.
So, what's a casting night?
Actually, it's basically teaching people how to fly cast or exposing people to newer equipment. And there'll be people there from Alaska Fly Fishing Goods, Trout Unlimited, and Rain Country Fly Fishers who are there to help people who want to learn more about it.
Great. And are those all local groups?
Yes.
Cool. So you said something about try out new equipment?
Yes. It's been really key. When this first started back in 1994 by Rain Country Fly Fishers, it was more of a casting competition. But it's evolved from that to where now most of the emphasis is on teaching people how to cast fly lines. Even if they've never tried it before. And a lot of that was made possible because of Brad Elfer's work, who owns the Alaska Fly Fishing Goods down in South Franklin, because he would bring gear there, so if people didn't have their own gear, they could still learn how. And if people had gear, but they used it down south for small trout, and now they're going to fish for salmon or something like that, they can try different gear and new stuff and different weights and things like that. So it's an opportunity to see the full gamut of what's available and have experienced people teach you how to use it.
Great. And what age people are you trying to attract?
Actually, we specifically geared the starting time at 6 o'clock so that school-age children could come. And last year when I was there, there were many people casting for the first time, some of them in the early grades of grade school.
Wow.
So, yeah, getting people to appreciate and have the opportunity to learn very young is one of the emphasis of the casting night.
Great. And you said that in the past these were casting competitions?
Oh, the first year or two. then they realized that there was a lot of interest for people to learn how. And until we had, you know, the local fly fishing shop join in, there wasn't the capability to open it up for people who didn't have their own gear. So it didn't take very long for it to totally evolve from being a casting competition where people are casting a line into a little ring someplace into where it was more of an educational event.
Great. Will you still have a ring there for people to give
it
their
best?
I don't
know. I haven't heard anybody talk about that this year because, like I say, the main emphasis is on education as opposed to showing how far you can cast.
Cool. So can you tell me, what are people trying to catch out there?
Well, locally, the primary fish that people are catching with flies are the coho. All the salmon up here have two names. So the coho is also called the silvers. The pink salmon or humpies will be in thick in late June, early July, and they'll try to catch those. The trout that are local are the Dolly Varden and the cutthroat trout. So those are the primary species that people catch, but you catch other things too. I've caught flounder on a fly, not that
really?
I was trying to.
Cool. So where are the best local spots to that you can share with our audience?
Well, honestly, Juneau is really blessed in that there's such a large run of fish in the Gastineau Channel right downtown that there will be king salmon and coho salmon coming back the hatchery there. And when they release the small salmon, the Dolly Varden and cutthroat will gang up on them. So they make the release about this time of the year, and people will catch trout down there right at Dipak. Other places that are popular is out at Echo Cove at times, and any of the local streams like Montana Creek and such have good fishing at times. Anytime fish are running out the ocean coming back, you might be there in the wrong day, and they were just here yesterday, and they're going to be here tomorrow. But those are local places that people will try.
And what's the best time of day to go out there?
Well, since I'm retired, I kind of go out when I wake up. it's unlike fishing down south where you really had to be an early bird because the water's cooler up here. And so a lot of people will fish based upon what the tide is. And some places are low tide places and other places are high tide places. And so they'll time it more by when the tide is rather than when the time of day.
Wow. So tell me a little bit more about the event. It's tonight.
The event is tonight, and I know that Alaska Fly Fishing Goods will have staff members there demonstrating gear. There will also be, members of both Trout Unlimited and Rain Country Fly Fishers who will be there to help people, learn how. And it'll be at Twin Lakes starting at 6 o'clock. And like I said, it's open at no charge to anyone, and young children who have an interest are encouraged to come.
And you said there's going to be food and drink available?
They'll cook hamburgers and have soft drinks there.
Wow. So it sounds like a pretty great day to go out to Twin Lakes.
Especially right now when it's not raining or blowing.
Do you feel like you lucked out on the weather?
Oh, I always do when it's not terrible out there.
Was there anything else you'd like to tell me about the event?
No, that's fine unless you have questions.
Nope.
All right.
Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
I've been thinking lately about the people I meet, the car wash on the corner and the hole in the street, the way my ankles hurt with shoes on my feet, and I'm wondering if I'm gonna see tomorrow. Father, forgive us for what we must do. You forgive us, we'll forgive you. We'll forgive each other till we both turn blue. Then we'll whistle and go fishing in the heaven. I was in the army, but I never dug a trench. Used to bust my knuckles on a monkey wrench. I go to town and drink, give the girls a pinch, but I don't think they ever even notice me. Father, forgive us for what we must do. You forgive us, we'll forgive you. We'll forgive each other till we both turn blue. Then we'll whistle and go fishing in heaven. Fish and whistle, whistle and fish. Eat everything that they put on your dish. And when we get through, we'll make a big wish that we never have to do this again. 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 Oh, my very first job, I said thank you and please. They made me scrub a parking lot down on my knees. Then I got fired for being scared of bees, and they only give me 50 cents an hour. Father, forgive us for what we must do. You forgive us, we'll forgive you. We'll forgive each other till we both turn blue. Then we'll whistle and go fishing in the heaven. Whistle and fish, eat everything that they put on your dish. And when we get through, we'll make a big wish that we never have to do this again. Again, again. Oh, Father,
forgive us for what we must do. You forgive us, we'll forgive you. We'll forgive each other till we both turn blue. Then we'll whistle and go fishing in heaven. We'll whistle and go fishing in heaven. We'll whistle and go fishing in heaven.
This is a Juno afternoon. I'm Annie Bartholomew, and I'm here with Michael Andronov, who is the owner of Samovar's, the new Russian place in town.
Hello.
So, tell me a little bit about your restaurant. I know you guys opened pretty recently. When was the opening day?
The opening day was like, we opened on like 5 weeks ago. This was April 15th.
Mm-hmm.
And we're doing well. Actually.
So business is good.
Business is good, right? Can't complain. Right, we have more customers, and we still work on the menu, right? And we want to increase the menu. But so far, right, people like it, right? And they're coming back and bring the friends, and you know, I'm very happy.
So the reason I heard about your restaurant was because you guys serve pelmeni there, and I heard they're made fresh.
Uh-huh. Yeah, pelmeni, it's traditional Russian food, and we make it, you know, from scratch every day and every night, actually, we make. It's like every Russian family, they have their own recipes, and it's very popular food in Russia, and yeah, we make it the best we can, and we're offering, like, nice and fresh pelmeni. And maybe next week, hard to tell, right, I don't want to promise it, but we work on a vegetarian pelmenis, like with potato and many things. Also in the vareniki, it's kind of dumplings. It's more like dessert. It's like sweet. And with a little more variety, right, with cherries, strawberries, blueberries, and kind of stuff, right? And
sweet pelmeni?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It's more like Ukrainian food, right?
And, oh, okay.
Yeah.
So what else do you have on your menu?
The menu right now we have borscht, of course. If many
What's
people.
What's borscht?
Borscht, it's a Ukrainian soup, like a Russian or Ukrainian soup made of beets with beef, right? So it's kind of 18 ingredients in it, right? And, but it's a famous Russian soup, right? We have borscht. We have galupcy. Galupcy, it's cabbage leaf. You know, stuff with meat, rice, and pork. We have pirozhki pies. It's traditional Russian pies with fillings of meat, cabbage, potato, mushrooms. What else we have? We have a blintzy, right? It's, I don't know how to describe it. It's crepes, right?
Crepes,
right. Also filling with cottage cheese and meat.
Wow. So are most of your customers local Junoites, or are they people off the ships?
No, it's local, right, because the ships, they just start. And I'm not advertising on the ships. We have some customers, actually, you know, the people who work on the ship, like Ukrainian, Russian people, Russian-talking, the crew members. Because then they see the sign, right, they know what it is. And But right now it's like, let's say 99% of the customer at this moment, it's local.
Wow.
Local people.
So where did your name come from?
Samovars, it's a Russian kind of, I don't know, it's a teapot. Teapot. It's like, again, like every family used to have it. And it's a real, real Russian name. You can find it many samovar names, restaurants. One of the famous one in New York, many in Moscow and all over the countries. But I name it Samovars. It's mean, I have many of samovars inside. I have about six samovars.
Are they just for show, or do you use the samovars?
And I have some, we're serving tea from samovar, like all Russian. Yeah, we have all varieties of Russian teas, different. And serving tea from a samovar, and I have just few antique ones.
Wow.
Very old ones, but like 100 years old pieces, right? Like for display.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to collect them, and it's kind of, you know, not many, you know, available right now, so because it's a history.
Wow. So where did you learn to cook traditional Russian food?
It's homemade, everything, homemade recipes, like, you know, like grandmas and mother cook, nothing special, you know, it's like, no, homemade stuff.
Great. So what are your hours and how can people come to your restaurant?
Open 7 days a week. Right now we didn't serve any breakfast yet, so we open from 11 till 10, 7 days a week. And again, I think maybe next week we can increase the hours and try to do some breakfast also.
Great. Is there anything else you want to share about your restaurant?
Please, you know, I like to actually appreciate the people who believe in me and when we open it and help me to build it. And my the neighbors, right, especially appreciate for Doug and a friend of mine, right, who's helping me to build it, Jay. and also, right, and I like to see the my customers, right, come here again and again. And please, right, check the specials, right, because we're still working the menu, right. There's going to be more and more stuff. And I'm happy to share my experience and my culture, I mean the Russian culture, in June with all with the people. And thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for coming on the show today.
I'm glad to be here.
And where's it located again?
It's 245 Marine Way, right across the Marine Park, near, it's like next door used to be Harley Davidson.
Great. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you. Thank
Do you know employers? Do you want to decrease employee turnover, lower healthcare costs, and improve your bottom line? Creating a family-friendly work environment makes it easy for new mothers to come back to work. A support program can be simple and can benefit your business as well as your employees. Contact a workplace breastfeeding consultant today for a free consultation at 500-8871 or JunoBreastfeedingAlliance.org. Sponsored by Juno Family Health and Birth Center and Search.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 in downtown Juno and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Ock Bay area, tuned to K276 AF 103.1 in Lemon Creek and Schweitzer Creek, K269AO at 101.7, Gustavus listens on K201AM 88.1, K220BT serves Hoonah at 91.9, an excursion in Lytton Icy Strait, hear KTOO on K210AS 89.9. In Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. KRNN can be heard on digital channel 872, and KXLL can be found at 873. We're also online at ktoo.org.
Tomorrow on a Juno afternoon, we'll talk to Dove Gartenberg and Ginny Hayes about the upcoming NAMI Inside Passages Forum. We'll talk to Dr. Emily Kane about her upcoming spring cleanse session. We'll get in tune for the 4th of July with Sandy Fortier of the Juno Marching Band, and Nancy DeCherney will be here for With Arts Up. That, Writer's Almanac, Music, and More, Thursday at 3 on KTOO News. If you miss a Juno afternoon or want to listen again, you can catch it in other local, statewide, national, and international news at ktoo.org. And your Juno weather forecast. Tonight, partly cloudy, lows 36 to 42, north wind to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, partly cloudy, highs around 69, with north wind 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, mostly clear, lows around 41, with a northwest wind of 10 miles per hour. Thanks for listening.
Her teacher said that she laid on her and her son in the bathrooms. The kids were both covered in mud, but neither one of them had a scratch on them. They were saved.
Surviving the Oklahoma tornado.
It's Wednesday, May 22nd, and this is All Things Considered from NPR News.